Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're going to be talking with Rick Boven. Rick is based in New Zealand. He has been a director at a number of companies. He's worked with a number of organizations globally. He leads a group called Stakeholder Strategies, and he was one of the founding partners at Boston Consulting Group in New Zealand. He's got some great insights that he's going to share with us, and looking forward to today's conversation with Rick. Well, I guess first off, can you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career history? We'd love to hear kind of how you've gotten to where you are today.
Yes, I started out studying and working in the social sciences, mostly as a research psychologist and an applied sociologist. Okay. And then kind of almost by accident drifted into business, and then did an MBA and was recruited into a strategic management consultancy, which eventually effectively merged with the Boston Consulting Group. And so I ended up spending quite a bit of time with BCG. And then kind of went out on my own and did some independent consulting. I led a think tank. I did a doctorate and took on some directorships. And I've kind of been living most of the time in the gig economy, in a way, doing advisory work or directing or consulting on working with other consultants, leading a consultancy, that sort of thing. All sorts of things. Yeah.
Sure. Well, give me, as far as if you were able to spend back time and talk to that 22-year-old Rick, what advice would you give him, knowing what you know now?
I think I'd advise him to probably put more effort into developing people skills early on. I think I kind of thought I could figure anything out, but at each stage you sort of decide what to invest in, and I was very strong analytically, tended to invest in your strengths, and it took me a long time to learn to invest in your weaknesses.
So thinking back to that first leadership position, tell me a little bit about that, and also just what do you wish you would have known earlier? You mentioned the people skills and the ability to lead people, but
I guess my first real leadership position was leading a team of four in a computer company that we started up in the late 1970s when they were microcomputers, and none of us knew much about anything. And so, the experience really was trying to bootstrap yourself into a whole lot of knowledge where everybody else was competing with you, was trying to do the same thing, because it was really just the first flourishing of computing. And I had to learn to guide a team of friends in an unknown space. And that was a very rapid learning experience. Yeah.
So as you were doing the consulting early on in your career, what were some things that you noticed about leaders' common mistakes that you saw people doing in companies that you think a new leader should be aware of and should watch out for?
I think a new leader, well, they all come with different skills and with different deficits. And so, in my experience with new leaders was when, for one reason or another, either because the new leader decided or their board decided or their owner decided to get me alongside of them. And I think it's quite a useful thing to have a sounding board. One of the things about new leaders is that they usually find themselves isolated from the people who have previously supported them, either because they've come in or because they've been promoted outside of a leadership team. And that isolation is challenging. And also, I think I'd say that Getting the right team around you is critical, and managing the relationships with the board is also critical. There's so many new things to learn because they've come from a functional background, or they might have come from a different industry. It's kind of a big step up, and they should also be conscious that their time will be much more challenged, and they will also find it difficult to adapt, and their personality will change a lot as they really take on responsibility, not only for themselves, but for the whole of the organization with a very large number of people to deal with. Yeah, very challenging.
So you've sat on a number of boards, and I think that's one of the things some of our listeners are first-time CEOs, and they maybe have never worked with a board closely. Having sat on both sides of it as a leader as well as on a board, what advice would you give somebody working with a board?
I guess the first thing would be to make sure you manage the expectations. I think often, I remember one of my colleagues commenting to me, and I agree with him. He said the reason that most people and most CEOs particularly get fired is because in one way or another they fail to manage expectations. So that would be the first thing that I would say. Secondly, I mentioned before managing the board, and it's not just managing what goes to the board and how the board process works, usually with the chair, but also there are times when a CEO needs to take responsibility for managing the board. And if they don't recognize that at times they have that responsibility, they can sometimes get themselves into difficulty. And then the other thing is about style, really, creating situations where the leadership team and the board have opportunities to establish relationships. And that requires a little bit of investment of time and money to make sure that that works. And then to manage the tone of the board, again, potentially along with the chair, but you have to make sure this happens. And that is to be sure that there's a very robust critique and contest of ideas at the board, while at the same time you strive to reach consensus, preserve relationships, and that it's quite hard to strike that balance, especially if you don't understand that you need to do that.
So you've worked globally. You've had as far as experience in different parts of the world. What are some things that you've learned in just adapting to, business can operate differently in each part of the world, but what are some things that you've learned working globally?
I guess I've had that kind of easy, because I've always worked within either a consulting arrangement that provides you with local support, or with a client arrangement that provides you with support. And I think the challenge often is for people who strike out without some kind of support, and that's a series of lessons that I probably haven't really learned. I recall when I first started spending time up in East Asia, there were occasions there where if we didn't have the right connections, we would bring somebody in as a navigator and a coach to help us to navigate them, the kind of cultural relationships, but also the content and maybe even sometimes just the logistics of dealing with it. And then there's a kind of common business culture that creates expectations that run across cultures, but at the same time, and pretty obviously, and I think everyone knows this, each country has its cultural idiosyncrasies, and you kind of need to understand particularly where the boundaries are that you don't want to step over.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So every leader I talk to continues to learn and grow and develop. Are there any books that you would recommend to other leaders that you think would be helpful?
I'm not a I'm not up to date with books, and I never have been up to date with books. My source of information was always people would recommend things to me. So, sure. In a way, I free rode on the knowledge of others because I had good relationships with people who said, "Oh, Rick should read this," and so sure. So I would get that and I'd kind of read it and digest it. But there's two things I guess that I still recommend to people, but they're old things. One of them is The Trusted Advisor. And it's valuable for professional services firms, which it's targeted towards, but it's also valuable for people who are managing relationships inside a business or wider organizational context. My work spans, you know, beyond businesses to government and to NGOs. So, you know, they have slightly different requirements. And the other book is, it's really a knowledge thing. It's the Miller-Hyman training for sales, which I did along with, I think, all other BCG partners many, many years ago. And there's probably something that's newer than that, but I think it just provided the fundamentals of sales management for large contracts of various kinds, and it's a very sort of disciplined, organized, strategic approach that's easy to access. So they're probably the only two things that I sort of recommend these days. But then I'm not really in the flow of what's the latest strategy idea. Sometimes clients tell me things. That's quite helpful.
So tell me any quotes that come to mind that you like to refer to, or any that you've used over time.
Well, not really a quote, but I think there's something that I learned that I use a lot and tell people a lot, which is from anomaly comes insight. And the idea is really that if you see something that looks wrong or doesn't fit, you should peel another layer off that onion and understand why it doesn't fit. And sometimes it'll just be a data mistake or something that's not very valuable. But it's digging into those things that surprise you, which is where you get the greatest insights. And in strategy, which is my core discipline, you're always looking for that insight. You're always trying to find something new, and usually that might come from new data as well. So that's something I think is really a useful idea. And of course, it's the way the scientific method works as well, although I hadn't quite put that together when I worked it out in consulting.
Well, I love to talk to people that have been in that, had that lens of consulting, and I think some of the best consultants are people that ask great questions. Give us a few of your questions as you talked about peeling back the layer of the onion to get to the kind of the real problem or the real issue. What are some things that that you think we should put in our toolbox?
I guess in competitive strategy, there's sort of a process that I use. It's not really template driven because everything's customized and all situations are unique, but there's a common set of kind of building blocks that strategy and business is built on. But the first thing is to really understand what success looks like and be able to clearly articulate and agree that, and then understand, in a competitive situation, who are your competitors? And from that, what are the bases for advantage? And they'll differ by industry. Where do you currently stand on those bases for advantage? And then how do you improve your position? And an improvement, you can take a bad business and find lots of improvement opportunities. It's still a bad business. You're not looking for improvements. What you're really looking for is those step changes that establish success. And if you can't find a way to do that, what should you do? So there's kind of a process embedded in that, but there's a lot of analytics that lie underneath that as well.
Well, we talked previously, and it sounds like you have a very interesting life in New Zealand. Some of the things that you do that are outside of your normal work. But what do you do to recharge on a daily basis outside work?
Oh, on a short-term basis, exercise of one kind or another. You know, either running or cycling, or you know, sometimes with weights, and work on the small farm we have here. Physical work, you know, that's always a good way to recharge. I read a bit, not business books, and then travel to see family and friends, and occasionally you know longer trips internationally. Not so much these days, partly because of the climate effect.
Sure. So tell me about your farm again, as far as the, just, it sounds like you have an interesting setup as far as the things that you grow and where you're at.
Yeah, we have a small farm. It's not an economic unit. And we lease part of it to the neighboring farmer for dairy. It's part of a dairy farm and, you know, a large dairy farm, 800 cows. We rent out the farmhouse and we live in a converted shed, which is very comfortable. And we have a greenhouse where we have subtropical permaculture plants, and we also have an outdoor permaculture food forest, which is temperate, and another sort of developing one that's got a Mediterranean kind of climate. We've got a lot of different microclimates on the place. So we have our own herd of small herd of Red Devon cattle, which we breed, and they are premium meat. They produce milk. We don't milk them, but they're also they're the cows that become the oxen with the big horns that you might have seen, and they pull carts for a couple of thousand years in England before they were brought out here and to America. There's some herds in America as well.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. Well, New Zealand is on my list of places to visit. So definitely a beautiful, beautiful country. So what parting advice would you give a newer up and coming leader?
I think, Know your strengths and know your areas for improvement, your opportunities for improvement, and understand those as you can for people who are around you. And then I think keep your eyes on the horizon.
Thanks, Rick. I've enjoyed our conversation. I know this will be helpful for those listening, and wish you continued success in all that all the ventures that you have.
Thanks very much, Mark.
All right.
Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.